Welcome, I'm Dr. Robert Glatter, Assistant Professor of Emergency Medicine at Northwell Health and an advisor at Medscape Emergency Medicine. Today we'll be discussing the use of propofol for difficult-to-treat headaches in the emergency department. I recently came across an article by Dr. Rick Pescator in Emergency Medicine News related to the use of low-dose propofol to treat headache in the ED. It immediately caught my attention since treating migraines and other types of headaches is a common part of emergency medicine practice. It also led me to a prior post of Dr. Pescator's in Rebel EM in June of 2017 describing the use of propofol as well. Now, not only are emergency physicians tasked with determining which headaches may be the most life-threatening and sorting that out, but also figuring out the most effective ways to treat them. The standard headache cocktail of a neuroleptic agent along with ketorolac, diphenhydramine, and dexamethasone has been ingrained as the most effective first-line approach for relieving migraine and tension headaches in the majority of patients. And it's often something that we practice in the emergency department using this approach. While it's certainly effective, another novel approach that deserves discussion is propofol. Joining us to discuss this interesting approach is Dr. Rick Pescator, Assistant Director of Emergency Medicine Research at Inspira Health Network in Vineland, New Jersey, and Dr. Sergey Motov, Associate Research Director at Maimonides Medical Center in Brooklyn, New York, and Assistant Clinical Professor of Emergency Medicine at SUNY Downstate. Welcome, gentlemen. Rick, I want to start with you, and I applaud your efforts for championing the use of propofol for managing headache in the ED. Certainly a novel approach. Can you review with me the basic pharmacology of propofol? First of all, why it's an ideal medication to treat headaches, first of all, its safety profile and efficacy?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Propofol is a safe drug, and I think there's no emergency medicine physician alive that's not abundantly familiar with propofol, its capabilities, and its qualities. Why does propofol work in headache? The first answer to that is we don't know 100% for sure, and the reason for that is we don't know 100% for sure why people get headaches. It probably works multifactorially. It has GABA potentiation, which probably provides a certain amount of direct analgesia. It reduces that sort of central sensitization and cortical spreading depression that we associate with primary headaches and migraine disorder. And then at low doses, it has a certain amount of NMDA inhibition, much like ketamine. And that's probably why it's so effective. And then more than anything, we know that it crosses the blood-brain barrier incredibly quickly. And if there's one thing we know about treating headaches, it's that speed with which these medications cross the blood-brain barrier is directly correlatable with their effectiveness in treating it.
And so, in other words, how did this come about? How is it that propofol worked its way into the armamentarium in general? Are there any studies, or did this come about just by accident?
This this is something that has really evolved over the last 5, really 10 years, where a growing body of literature really supports its use. And I would argue that there's more literature supporting the use of propofol in primary headache disorders than there is in a lot of what we do in emergency medicine. It obviously started with case reports, case series. But since then, we have retrospective reviews, prospective observational studies, and even relatively strong randomized controlled clinical trials, which demonstrate that propofol is a safe and effective treatment for treatment of primary headache in the emergency department.
Okay, thanks. Now, Sergey, I wanted to get your thoughts on this too. Certainly, you deal with pain management. You're a specialist in this, and you've written extensively about ketorolac, saline dosing, and so forth, and recently published, obviously, in the Annals of Emergency Medicine. Do you see this as something that could potentially replace our standard headache cocktail, or something really that's sort of an adjunct, really, for the difficult to treat?
Well, at this point, well, before we start, I want to compliment and thank Rick for pushing the agenda and putting together these amazing publications. Thank you for doing this. At present, I think propofol is not in the prime time, but we should definitely consider using it. And personally, my experience, I resort to propofol when traditional treatment modalities, as you mentioned, to neuroleptic cocktail and NSAIDs after 2 or 3 doses fail to achieve appropriate analgesia. I resort them as a rescue analgesia.
Okay, I see. Are there certain kinds of patients that you find this is more appropriate for? Rick, we'll start with you.
I think that's a great question, and I would flip that around a little bit. There's certainly a cohort of patients in who the neuroleptic agent has probably a little bit of a necessary secondary effect. The propofol, there's a patient population in whom it's more effective. Who that patient population is, we've yet to really parse out. I've had a lot of success in this with patients with complex migraines, specifically patients with ocular migraines who are temporarily blinded by the severity of their headache, and it's pretty amazing to watch them gain their sight back with a low dose of propofol. I don't know who the exact population that benefits from this is yet. For now, it's a taste test approach, and reserving it for rescue analgesia is a certainly reasonable and laudable way to use this. But as we gain greater clinical experience with the use of propofol, as we become more comfortable with it, and as we begin to identify patient populations who in whom it's particularly effective, I do see it becoming more of a first-line agent.
I see. And Sergey, any of your thoughts on this as well?
Yes. Well, obviously, multi-resistant headache, that would be subgroup of patients who would be totally eligible for this type of analgesia. And my favorite group of patients, pregnant women, third trimester. If I'm going to take you back, I'm going to get an opportunity. You know, the FDA classification, ABCD, it's irrelevant at this point. But let's just say I have a 35-year-old weaker patient that I had recently who comes in with an intractable headache. It's not gestational headache. It's just headache, migraine headache. She doesn't have a preeclampsia.
Right.
She gets Reglan, which is category B. She gets magnesium, which used to be B. Now it's D. She gets second dose of Reglan, and nothing works. However, if you go by the categories, propofol is category B. So she comes to me from L&D for intractable headache. And I follow Riggs. Well, before that, I used 10 milligrams every 5 minutes. And I kind of broke her at 60. She was absolutely happiest woman alive. She was headache-free. She went home. So pregnant woman, third trimester, if you do by category, propofol is safe in pregnancy, same as a metoclopramide, same as magnesium. Use it.
Right. I can imagine the pushback maybe from other providers just thinking about, you know, the pregnancy and just especially OB, how they would approach this. But certainly with its categorization, I think it's safe. In general, so what in terms of monitoring, I guess that's the issue, because a lot of nursing, a lot of administrators are concerned about how this drug has had problems in the past. And here we are trying to push it in small aliquots. But how do we approach the administration? What's the best plan? Rick, you want to start with you?
That's the key question that comes up when we're talking about propofol and the use of headache. And the first thing to get across here is that it is not the drug that makes the sedation. It's the dosages and it's the intent of the drug. And the small doses in which we're administering this medication are incredibly similar, just as like Sergey said, to low-dose ketamine or subdissociative ketamine utilization. And there's really no need, certainly not at all, for the use of standard conscious sedation or moderate sedation protocols and the administration of propofol in the way we're talking about it. Are we gonna be reckless with it? Absolutely not. And we're gonna take into account the fact that this drug has a history associated with it. But there is no emergency physician alive who's not comfortable with this drug, who doesn't understand its utilization. And we're gonna monitor them for respiratory depression like we would any opioid analgesic, for example. But this is an incredibly safe
drug. Right. Do you have a specific protocol at your shop that you have already sort of written out that you refer to?
I've at this point been lucky enough to work at quite a few hospitals, and there were one or two hospitals that required a sort of written protocol, but the vast majority of my utilization of this drug is very similar to my utilization of any other drug in the emergency department.
And Sergey?
Yeah, I agree with Rick and I agree with you, Robert. The traditional thinking, doctor champion, nurse champion, everything goes into the places. It's a good approach, but with a little cautious optimism, I believe to protect ED personnel, you have to protocolize it. You have to be clear in what you're saying, that it's sub-anesthetic dose of propofol. Do not require monitoring. Do not require certain interventions beyond usual, though we do with, let's say, morphine. But until it's protocolized, right, until it's, you know, vetted by Department of Nursing and Chairman and everybody else, I would just be pushing. Right. For, get it protocolized and then just roll it out.
So I'm going to take the contrarian view. Why not use low-dose ketamine as opposed to, say, propofol? What's the advantage or disadvantage, or how do you see it?
I will defer to Sergey for a lot. I mean, Sergey's good on this. But sure. You know, propofol is going to add a little bit that ketamine lacks. There's a little bit of a GABA action that you're getting out of propofol. There's a bit of that inhibition of cortical spreading depression that you're not going to get out of the ketamine. And that's not to say that ketamine can't be effective. This is just another tool to place in our toolbox, and it adds to that versatility.
What's going to make you select propofol over ketamine when you look at this patient? Is there anything specific that you can point to?
I can't say that there's anything I've been able to parse out. I think we've all had a little bit of experience with ketamine now that we can look at a patient and say, this is probably not the best patient to administer the ketamine on. And that probably goes into the hopper.
So if they have a psychiatric history, an agitation history, some history of agitation, is that something that you'll kind of consider with when you're looking at ketamine versus propofol?
Without question, that goes into, I look at their blood pressure. The patients who are profoundly hypertensive may be more amenable to propofol than for ketamine, for example. And then overall, I look at the sort of severity of their symptoms.
Correct. And Sergey?
So I've come up, well, I've been using the stepwise approach to pretty much any headache. If propofol fails, I resort to ketamine. And that's usually what I do. Because let's say you won't be able to succeed with propofol. What's your next line of agent, right? And we do follow the stepwise approach and such. I resort to ketamine to double an NMDA blockade, and I use ketamine if propofol fails. And as Rick, you know, a patient with a schizophrenia, which exacerbate, maybe, you know, pregnant woman, I avoid ketamine in this because it's not entirely safe. And we're not talking about young children, but it's essentially very safe medication as well. You know, hemodynamic compromise with sub dissociative dose ketamine is negligible. But what I do is I do propofol. If propofol fails, at least I have something else to rely on and use before general anesthesia and total sleep.
How about pediatric migraine? Have either of you used this approach in that population?
I have, absolutely. And in fact, I find it particularly effective in the pediatric population. Pediatric population. In fact, one of the studies that sort of created this in my mind was in a pediatric population specifically. This is a population that in whom propofol is even more safe than patients who have any possibility of respiratory compromise, and it's very effective.
And Sergey?
I haven't used in pediatrics. I primarily do adult medicine, but exactly, I echo what Rick said.
Sure.
One of the first trials that evaluated rule of sub anesthetic dose of propofol, that was actually in pediatric patients, and there are by far the most, you know, fruitful soil to use propofol for this type of conditions.
I wanted to talk about a trial in 2014 that looked at sumatriptan subcutaneously versus propofol. I'm assuming either of you are familiar with this trial. It was a randomized trial that compared the two. Basically, the outcome was that there was no significant difference at 1 and 2 hours from my take. There, 30 minutes, there was an improvement, but the main issue is that the propofol reduced the side effects that you often would see with sumatriptan, the nausea, the vomiting, maybe some chest pain or things of that nature. Is that, you know, what are your thoughts on this trial?
That's the crux of the issue. The side effect administration of all these drugs, I think, is truly the crux of this issue. They're all going to be effective. But if we're couching that in the setting of a whole bunch of side effects and a whole bunch of prolonged ED stay, whatever we can do to minimize that is a target for me.
And sorry.
Well, I'm always having an issue when titratable medication gets compared to non-titratable and when the route is slightly different. And remember, sumatriptan has a fairly narrow indication when it comes to migraine headache only. Propofol, contrary to it, can be used for any type of headache as long as it's multi-drug resistant.
Right.
And look, side effects are side effects. I personally believe propofol is safer than sumatriptan. Although it's a young patient with complicated migraine, it helps. Go ahead, use it.
And Rick, you bring up the length of stay. That's a key issue. You earlier we were discussing that maybe 15 to 20 minutes could be, you know, the total, you know, duration of the stay in the ED and pain relief and discharge subsequently. Do you have to monitor these patients though for any significant time afterwards?
Absolutely not. And there's simply no reason to keep these patients after they endorse that the feelings of the propofol's effect are gone. Propofol is an incredibly short half-life. They're relieved almost immediately. They get a Tylenol, they go out the door. And in my experience, it's a rapid discharge, very low rate of headache recurrence, and incredibly successful. And it gets dead empty for the next patient with the headache.
Right. Are you finding the same, Sergey? Very quick discharge after you administer?
Yeah. Totally agree with Rick.
Is there any reason that we shouldn't really be adopting this in a very wide manner throughout the U.S.? So in other words, what are the main issues that why has not been adopted?
The biggest is stigma, right? The biggest is that people are afraid to administer this medication, which carries the Michael Jackson stigma and carries the stigma of conscious sedation.
Right.
I think we'll get there. I really do.
Okay. And Sergey?
I agree 100%. We just need to get people at a level they would understand that we're not sedating people. We're just taking care of their pain.
Is there any risk of physical or psychological addiction? I mean, we could have people returning to the ED that really got the, you know, sort of a euphoric effect, and they are returning for that effect.
I'd love to hear what Sergey has said. In my experience, I am not aware of any literature that's looked at the addictiveness or dependence level of propofol. In my experience, I have not seen that happen. And contrary to warnings of my colleagues that patients would be bouncing back for their milk of amnesia, I haven't seen it.
I've yet to see a patient who would come back to me and said, can you please give me propofol?
Right. I think we need to have a larger study, a very good sized randomized study with good power to really flesh out, you know, and sort of validate what these smaller studies have shown. And I think that needs to be done. Any other ideas you wanted to bring up or thoughts with propofol? Either of you?
My sort of parting message here would be that we do a lot in the emergency department that has little, if any, knowledge base surrounding it. If there's a drug that emergency physicians are more than comfortable with, it's certainly going to be propofol. And if there's a drug that has as wide a therapeutic window as propofol, I'd like to see it. It's incredibly effective. It's rapid in its effectiveness, and it has very limited dangers associated with it. And I think that it offers a good option for many of our patients.
Thanks. And Sergey?
I agree. You know, I just said a little cautious optimism, properly selected patient, properly selected dose, with understanding that we're not sedating, we're just taking care of pain by using a protocolized approach that is vetted by nurses and doctors in within the department. These are the key to success of using propofol for headache.
And I think you're bringing home the message that here we're trying to spare opioids, we're trying to help patients, and I think this is a valid approach. It's validated certainly in studies and something that we could, you know, reach into our toolbox and use. I want to thank both of you. This has been a really informative discussion, and I appreciate you joining me.